Yo! I've got to find a better intro than yo. It's got to be like, hello. Maybe it's hello.
We've been saying we're going to produce something. We will eventually.
Maybe it's greetings, or maybe it's a jingle some car keys. I don't know. Welcome to Cars and Kicks, everybody. I am Jacques Slade, and today, as usual, we have an amazing episode for you guys. We're talking a little bit of technology, talking about a little bit of lifestyle, and how those both intertwine in the world of cars and kicks. It's like we thought of a title that actually nails the show perfectly.
Right.
I mean, where is our genius test? Anyway, as always, this show wouldn't be what it is with just me alone, because it would be pretty boring and just me rambling off nerdy stuff about sneakers. And that's why I have the two people that are on this show that really bring this all together. They are the glue. I am just the balled up piece of paper here. One knows sneakers, one knows cars, and one knows both of those things. Yeah, that's
something
it.
Like all that. Right.
Eric,
something
like that. Nick, talk to him.
Yeah, well, since I'm just mainly the car guy, that's all I have to offer here and there. My name's Eric Valdez, for those of you that they're just tuning in for the first time, which if you are, by the way, go check out all our old episodes, season one, so to speak, and the few that we have for season two. The kind of mediator here between Jacques and I, and I don't know if it's going to appear this way on your screen, but he is literally in the middle of us right now on my screen, is Nick, who brings both knowledge from both worlds of cars and kicks to this show. So, Nick, take it away.
Yeah, I just kind of obsess over both of these things in a very unhealthy way. But, this podcast makes it seem like I'm kind of normal, I guess, in a way. But honestly, I want to kind of go back to Jacques. Like, you know, he's acting as if Eric and I aren't perfectly able and capable to be his caddy while he's at the Masters. You know, like, I don't know. Like,
he's headed that way, right?
So
that's an inaccurate assessment.
I saw your hole in one recently. I think a couple million people saw your hole in one.
Yeah, the hole in one into the water. Let's be very specific here. And I was not playing at the Masters. I attended the Masters. Playing the Masters and attending the Masters are two completely different things. Like, you have a chance of attending Masters. Playing at Masters, you probably don't have a chance. That's closer to zero.
But it was great. It's fantastic. Nonetheless,
I was. It was a fantastic time. The course is beautiful, as everybody says it is once they see it. There is something very there's something very traditional about it, but it doesn't feel like racist or bigoted in the traditional sense. Like, you know, most things are going to be like, oh, it's traditional. You know, it probably means racist or something.
In the South.
It's in the South. But this doesn't feel that way. It feels traditional in a way that, like, that's holding on to the culture of the game and the essence of the game in a way that you don't necessarily see at other places. And it's a cool thing to experience. The no phone thing is still weird. But you kind of get, you know, after an hour or so, you're just like, I'm used to it. Like, the only thing that bothers me about it is, like, if we go together and you want to follow Rory and Nick wants to follow Neiman, like, we're probably not going to see each other until we get back to the hotel that night, just because there's no way to contact each other. You can have a watch and you can tell time, unless you're like, all right, meet me at 12 at 1:30. Like, unless you do that, you're just kind of walking around a massive golf course and there's no way to contact anybody else.
That's interesting.
I mean, look, let's be real. Our generation lived through the time of, hey, meet me here at this time, blah, blah, blah.
True.
I'm sure we can figure it out, because all the young kids listening right now, y'all don't know anything about the, hey, I'm going to be at the park at noon. Cool. We'll see you then. And then not hearing anything for, like, you know, 24 hours until you actually just roll up and your friends are there. That's how it used to be. But I kind of like the no phone policy in a weird way. Maybe that's my boomer speaking, but, like, can you use your Apple Watch? Is that taken away too? Or could you, like, send text messages through Apple Watch, something like that?
So you can send text messages from your Apple Watch, but it's frowned upon.
Fair enough.
It's not like, Like, they don't want to, it's almost like they don't want you to have any communication with the outside world, really.
They want you to be present, like, and enjoy what's taking place.
They want
place.
You to be present in the moment and enjoying it. Idea. Like, locking in those memories. But, you know, there's no way to, like, I find value in, like, the slideshows that, like, iPhoto and Google Photo all put together automatically. And they're like, oh, 2 years ago you were here. And you're like, oh, man. Hey, y'all remember this? And then you can text your friends and be like, yo, this just popped up. You can't do that with Masters because it's not going to pop up unless you just remember and then you can say something. You know, you can get a picture of the people in front of the Masters board, like all of those sorts of things. But I say all that to say it's a great experience. It is like the tradition unlike any other, like that holds very, very true. And, you know, everybody there kind of respects it and understands it. So there is a I don't want to say magic, but there is a vibe to being there and being there in person. You see more on TV, obviously, than you do when you're there in person, just because like you're really relegated to one specific hole. Mm-hmm. So or whatever hole you're traveling to or when you're walking around, so you can't see what's happening here. But it does build anticipation. So I'll stop talking about this because I can talk about golf all day. But no, like, there was a moment, I was there on Friday and Saturday, and Saturday Rory was kind of making his charge to get closer to first place. And you don't really know that. You hear like cheers and stuff around the course, but the only way you really knew something was happening was because the scoreboard is behind you. And so you would see them put up the scores. And that kind of became the proxy for watching what everyone was doing. Because the scores would go up, and then you'd hear, kind of thing. It's almost like you're listening by radio back in the day, and then you would hear, like, and it's knocked out of the parking lot. I'm like, yeah! You can't see it. And so it was very similar to that. Like, it was like a metal board, and so it would, like, clack, and the scores would come up, and then the audience would react, or the scores would come up, and people were like, "Oh, like somebody got a bogey or something." So that part was kind of cool. It felt very, very apocalyptic. Like you have no way to contact anybody, and like you're getting smoke signals from somewhere to kind of let you know what's going on. But outside of that, it was great, fantastic time. But more importantly, let's talk. Yeah.
All right, I gotta ask though, because you've been to a lot of amazing places in the golf world. Is this is this as high as it gets on the bucket list? I mean, outside of playing, right?
I would say course wise, it's the most like manicured, like perfect course that I've seen for sure. Like, and as far as like the conditions that the course is in. Like it's unmatched. It's unmatched.
I read
in that regard.
This because I'm, as some of y'all know, I'm like huge into lawn care and my lawn these days. And so I was reading up on, you know, this during the Masters that week specifically, they mow the fairways all in the same direction. Typically they go back and forth, which creates like the cool stripes, et cetera. But at Augusta for the week of the Masters, they mow them all in the same direction, which visually creates a more carpet-like look on camera. And it also, on some holes, it'll change the way you play, right? Because you're either hitting into the grain or with the grain. So you got to adjust for the roll or the, you know, the stoppage of your drives, et cetera. And I found all of those like fun facts to be really, really interesting. I mowed my lawn like meticulously last week or something. And, I didn't get any love for that, but I felt like I was there right there with you.
I can see Eric turning his yard into like Masters fairway,
right?
Because and we're gonna get into some nerdy shit here, but that's like a lot of work though to get it that low. Like your
they
grass
mow, I think
it
like 3/8 of an inch. Yeah, they mow it like 3/8 of an inch for. If I remember correctly, for Masters Week, I keep my yard right now is at like half an inch. So it's a little bit lower than that. Just saying, you know, you guys got to step it up there at Augusta National. But anyway, no, you're right. We're going to go off on a whole tangent of geeky lawn care and golf stuff here if we don't stop. This is why Nick is on the show. Nick, please reel us back in here.
So we're going to go from no technology at the Masters, no phones, no communication, no anything. And we're going to talk about technology it might even be too advanced for most consumers, because this last week I was invited up to Corte Madera to check out the Sony Honda Mobility Afila, and it's phenomenal. Like, I mean, I've been in a lot of modern vehicles. I've been in the Rivian, the Teslas, I have enough experience hands-on playing with things, but this car is a 50-50 joint venture company between Sony and Honda. So like, these are kind of two companies that really shaped my life, you know, like, I could list off a number of things from both of these brands.
Right.
But what I thought was really interesting about it is just how forward thinking it is. It's got this whole surround display. It uses 40 plus sensors. It's radar, LiDAR. I forget all of them off the top of my head right now, but it's so advanced, and it runs, a Microsoft system. It feels a lot like the PlayStation network, but and literally have a PlayStation controller in there to control it if you want.
Oh, wow.
But it's all touchscreen. But this is such a crazy thing. And I was talking to the Afila team that was there about it and asked them. So I'm going to ask you guys, and would love to hear from the audience too. But like, I almost feel like there's this, like, the push for technology to move forward is almost too good. It's almost too advanced, for a lot of your average consumers. I think of people like my parents, where they may be relatively capable when it comes to technology, but it's kind of like a computer. It's kind of like an iPhone. You don't use 90% of what it's able to do. And cars are becoming even more of that. And this has a bunch of different features that potentially could leave people behind, but it has a really cool kind of social, like PlayStation Network, like gamification kind of feel to it. So on one hand, I'm wondering, like, is the technology of these cars going to leave people in the dust, and like literally move too far advanced for the average consumer? On the second part of the question, being like a longtime Honda Element owner, that community is much like riding a motorcycle, right? You're going to get waves from anybody else in a Honda Element when you drive a Honda Element. I love that part about car communities that acknowledge other people. Mm-hmm. The Afila has, like, not only do they have things in the works to make that even more prominent as a user interface and throughout the screens, you can take your gamer stuff. You can play the games on the screens. You can take, Sony pictures, watch them on the screen. You can move them around, all that kind of stuff. But it also has like kind of this like front bar that allows you to customize and share, like, I'll drop some footage in, but like basically welcomes the Cars and Kicks show to this studio that they're showing off the car. Changed it to Gran Turismo to show the different colors and the different animations that they can do on it, and that aspect of it is almost like your car is going to be winking at other Afilas. Like, I was kind of made the joke of like, your cars are going to be friendly with each other down the road when they're like, oh hey, it's one of me, Like, is that really the future? Like, I feel like I just talked myself into, like, this is like the Jetsons type stuff with like electric vehicles that.
It sounds to me like the technologically advanced Sony equivalent of giving another Jeep owner a rubber duck.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like, yeah. Exactly.
Yep. It's like they're going to notice, to your point, with radar, sonar, LiDAR, all the dot dars, whatever the they
dars.
Are
all the dars,
they're gonna notice each other and do a little like headlight wink or something like that, which is kind of like at the surface level, oh that's cute. Deeper than that, it starts to sound really scary to me. Like, we're entering this new world of robotics and AI where it's like, okay, what happens if like a rival car company enters the chat, so to speak, and y'all are driving down the road and like, the Afila tries to just be friendly and throw a little headlight wink. The other car's like, no, what'd you do? And then suddenly you've got like an automated car chase going on because nobody's actually driving at this point in time because everything is done, via AI, et cetera. And we're just passengers on some like rival car chase, car gang chase from these different car companies. You know, I think I just came up with a plot for like a new Will Smith movie.
I was just going to say, yeah. I don't know if any, if anybody's listening that doesn't know that Eric is in the film business and acts, I feel like he just took this idea and went straight to Gone in 60 Seconds with it. And like now,
you know,
100%. Like I'm on the other side. Like I'm excited about the technology side of things. I want to electrify everything. Everything I want to electrify. Put some nice speakers on it so you can hear the rumbles and all of those things that people really like about car, like the car guy feel, like the wants a back massage while they drive from the engine. But I want it to be electrified. So seeing this is exciting to me. I do think there is a limit, though, to the technology. I think a lot of times car brands are throwing things in cars that are just – they're just throwing things in there. Like Tesla, for instance, there's no reason – that you should not be able to open the glove box without touching the touchscreen. Like that's just extra. The glove box should have a latch. Just like the windows, you can push them up and down, and the glove box, like manual things like that, you should be able just to open. So I think that part, I think brands do a little too much. Like having a message on the front, on the bumper. I don't know. I don't know if I need that. Like, I don't need an LED display on my front bumper. I mean, get it. It's cool.
It is interesting. You know, you brought up a valid point. Like, over the past decade or so, car companies have just gravitated towards everything being, you know, going from, like, a touchscreen to, like, just screens everywhere to being, you know, like, in your Tesla, everything operates via the center stack right there. I drove my wife's Polestar to ironically go look at a car that was not futuristic. It was, for all the car geeks out there, an S52 swapped E36 320i Touring, a Euro wagon that had a M3 engine.
Yes. In
it. Jacques knew exactly what I was talking about there.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I'm not looking that up right now at all.
I went to go look at this car, and I was driving my wife's Polestar, and the climate control just wouldn't work. It's all in the center stack, kind of like, you know, like the Tesla or whatever. And so as I'm driving down the road and it's pouring rain and everything out here, starts to fog up the windshield and everything, I can't turn anything on because nothing is working on the center stack. So here I am driving in torrential rain and I have to hold down the button for whatever it is, 10, 15 seconds to do a soft reset like you do with every other electronic device in the world. And thankfully it came back after that. But to your point, wow. Jacques, like we spent, not we, but the automotive company spent all this time trying to like streamline things and put everything into a center stack or whatever, to the point where if one minor thing goes wrong, you lose control of a lot of basic functions. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of a tip of the iceberg there, where there's some people doubling down on that, you know, Afila, for example, and Sony and Honda with this. But I noticed like in the new, it's a small thing, but kind of a car geek thing, in the new Ferrari 296 Speciale that just released, like Ferrari for a few years have had these like little buttons on the steering wheel that were like haptic buttons for blinkers, for this, for that, but they were stupid, especially in a car that's designed to be like a driver's car where your hands are, both hands are typically on the wheel. And, you know, if you accidentally hit it with the pad of your hand and turn the blinker on or hit the horn, it's dumb. Either way, they've gone back to actual physical buttons instead of these little haptic feedback, touch-sensitive buttons. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we've been in this trial-and-error phase of technology and the people have spoken. So it'll be interesting to see where it all goes. And as with anything, it's all consumer-driven. And if most people want to go the route that Jacques just mentioned, where they love the tech and they want everything electrified and blah, 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 then that's where it may end up. But I feel like we've got a long way to go before that becomes fully mainstream, maybe my son's generation.
So I think,
yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead, Jacques.
Jacques, no, has I was going to say,
I like the tech, but I also don't like the tech. Like, I don't think there needs to be screens everywhere in the car, but then I think back to when I was a kid and how cool I thought it was when I saw cars that had like TVs in the back of the headrest. So like, sure, there is a cool factor to that, I think, but also I think it can be distracting. It's more about the driver being distracted, I guess, is more of my concern with the technology. Yeah. Like the passenger and the, you know, the people in the back, like all of that. I feel like, yeah, give them all the tech that they can use, let them do whatever they need to do. But when it comes to the driver, like that stuff can be distracting, but I do love the tech. I just think it needs to be done in a smart way. And I can't wait to see where that actually goes. Like, I think the Afila is giving us the first glimpse of it, and kind of like same thing with like the Ray-Ban. Do I have my Ray-Bans on today? No. The Ray-Ban glasses, like being able to project something onto the screen, like projecting directions onto the screen.
Yeah. So
you can kind of look through them. Like, I think that's like in my mind, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But also, am I like, is that going to mess with somebody's vision with their, when they back focus in order to see the screen and they're not looking through to see what's coming in traffic? So like, is there, what's the balance there? But then you have the, you know, the obstacle avoidance systems and the early warning systems to kind of help notify people. So I don't know. I like it, but I get some of the concerns for it and some of the things that it takes away, like stupid stuff like the glove box, like that. Like that just can't be, that shouldn't be a thing.
Either way, we've come a long way from watching little dot matrix dolphins jump on the Pioneer head units back when I used to do car audio.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, I just dated myself big time. If y'all don't know anything about the dolphins on the Pioneer head unit, youngins, go Google that.
This is how big that was for me. It was the DEHP 8000R. We put in. I probably put 100, 200 of those in cars back in the day. Yeah, like it was
Nick
a big deal.
Just dropped knowledge.
So going back to the technology, I think that's like there's two things that I think about when I think about this technology. One, you know, I don't want to bash on Tesla constantly, but like,
oh, I think we lost you, Nick.
Here we go.
There you go.
My battery just died. So the idea of Sony being the tech in this, and the idea of Honda being the car in this, definitely takes away some of that unease that Eric's talking about for me. Like I agree that a lot of the cars that have been, you know, like. It's almost like people like they're like building an EV and then they try to, cram as much technology in as they possibly can, even though that doesn't necessarily help anything. It actually makes it more difficult for the average consumer, like Jacques' glove box example. The idea that like these two companies kind of come from different worlds and they are both very, let's say, competent in like the worlds that they play in and, you know, manufacture in, definitely gives me a little bit more optimism towards it. I do feel like there's my hope is that there's a checks and balance system there. That's like, hey, the tech's going a little too far. Hey, the car itself still needs to be, you know, like good. Right. The other part of the that stood out to me, like walking around the car, seeing all of the stuff, like there's amazing aspects of it. The control center is very easy to use. You know, you get to, like, if you're watching something, or if let's say you're somebody sitting in the passenger seat, they can swipe something away, or the driver can swipe something away. There's a little bit of a, like, I forget what they call it, but like almost like, you know, like how they have those like privacy screens on the phones.
Yeah.
So like you can't necessarily watch while you're driving. But the other thing that I like recently saw was a video from Mark Rober about the LiDAR versus the LiDAR versus the cameras. This is a combination of, you know, however many cameras and, you know, however many sensors. And it's like, it's obvious, right? You see the little bump on the top in the middle. You see the two little kind of rabbit ears on the you know, roof in the front. And that video talks a lot about Tesla and their camera system being maybe not up to par with what LiDAR can do, because LiDAR can, you know, essentially, you know, see through fog, rain, water, all those things. Like, it's still very, very effective, like to the point where, you know, like Mark Rober drove the car through a wall, you know, a fake wall. And like, you know, they show the differences between those two technologies. That to me is like where the future of this stuff is going, right? Like if we're going to be better than human reaction, like, we have to be faster than cameras can send information, in my mm-hmm. opinion. Like, that is mm-hmm. like the key to safety in these more and more comfortable settings, right? Because presumably, you know, 20 years from now or whenever it is, we're all going to be, you know, basically chauffeured around by these cars that, you know, have yeah. these systems that are just watching every single thing. And like, it seems like the Aphila is kind of like Jacques said, like kind of the, you know, the first step into like a new level of this, you know, mm-hmm. the depth of this, right? Like when you're looking at the screen, you can see, you know, what the LiDAR picks up. You can see that it's picking up people, that it's picking up, you know, the door frame of the, you know, studio that they're in. All of these things are like,
it's dope.
Like right there, if you want to look at them. But like, yeah. to me, we need to not be dependent on our own shortcomings more than anything before we can get to the point where these are really fully self-driving, you know, kind of like, hey, I'm just going to hop in. And, you know, you see it around here with the Waymos and those kind of vehicles where you can hop in and have, you know, like a car take you around. But that also is like not quite what we're looking for as far as consumer interfaces go, consumer interaction. Mm-hmm. That's very much like robo-taxi kind of vibes. You know, like you want to be more engaged. But to Jacques' point about the screens, like it was really cool to hear that in this, there's so much flexibility. You can all be doing different things. You can all be doing, you know, you can have a different screen, you know, like driver can be looking at maps, passenger can be playing video games, you know, movies in the back, and it's all separate. You'll be able to connect, you know, separate headphones, devices. There's, you know, HDMIs and all that stuff to plug in if you want to set something up. But it really made me think about kind of the technology on the footwear side that we've talked a little bit about in the past. But like, we got to this point with Dot Swoosh and Nike where they were releasing NFT-based, I don't know if NFT-based shoes, but like blockchain-based shoes with Artifact. And
yeah,
recently they just announced a Dot Swoosh Dirty Air Force One. And I couldn't help but think, like, wait, did we just, like, revert back to, like, I feel like this is the absolute step in the wrong direction in the sneaker world. So I don't know, Jacques, if you want to talk a little bit about more about this release, but it's
yeah,
got me kind of dumbfounded.
It's interesting because, you know, when you think of Dot Swoosh, you think of things that are just either some have some sort of digital slant to them or that like the tech is there that's pushing them into the next space. And these don't do that at all. I mean, I guess the stretch is that, oh, it's digital because it kind of came from the digital trend of seeing people on social media in dirty shoes. So that may be the cause for it. But like, as far as like a tech story, I don't see it as a tech story. And maybe this is Nike turning Dot Swoosh into more of like a cultural staple as opposed to like a digitally led staple. Maybe it's going to become a place for, you know, for tier zero kind of stuff. And that's where they appear first. But I'm not sure like the actual digital connection. Cause you know, starting in the Web3 and all that whole universe and Bitcoin and Ethereum and on the network and all of those things, like for it to start there and to see where it is now, you can see that Nike just kind of lost the thread in a sense. When they, you know, when they started doing Donkey Kong versions of the Air Max One, like the Polygon, like it's taken away that, you know, we forgave them for that because it still had like a video game digital touch to it. Yeah. These are just dirty Air Force Ones that have a white layer underneath. So you wear away the top layer and then there's a white layer underneath, but that's just going to be dirty if you're wearing the shoes and like they wear in certain places. So the white's going to get dirty underneath. I don't know. I mean, they're trying to capitalize on a moment, but I don't know.
It seems like, again, and I don't know everything about this release like you guys do, but it seems to me like maybe one of the approaches here is the Dot Swoosh Dot One attempt at things somewhat failed. And so it's a rebrand of sorts. Like, okay, let's come out with something here Let's try to, while we try to revitalize what the future of Dot Swoosh is actually going to be, let's throw something out there with this thinly veiled, literally and figuratively speaking, sneaker, call it the Dot Swoosh, and have some technology that is magical to most, where it looks like a Golden Goose or a Balenciaga or something that's like pre-distressed and then magically gets cleaner. Like, is this a diversion tactic while they figure out what they're going to do with Dot Swoosh? I don't know. I'm throwing that out there to you.
Possibly. I mean, they're under new leadership now. So maybe this is, you know, like, let's change the way we operate with Dot Swoosh and use it as a channel, a channel for us that's not necessarily digital, but, you know, maybe it's like the new energy, you know, the NRG, you know,
Nike
sometimes releases shoes and on the end it says NRG. Maybe Dot Swoosh is going to kind of become that NRG heading for digitally derived, I guess, product or digitally inspired product. Because, I mean, it's all inspired by all the girls on TikTok that wear dirty Air Force Ones. And now they can wear their dirty Air Force Ones and they'll be clean.
Yeah. For a minute, and then they get dirty again, but dirty for real.
And they get dirty again. Like, I'm trying to connect the dots. I'm trying to put it together. I just don't. I don't know.
I think here's where you jump in, Jacques. And instead of releasing your line of like revitalizing your line of like sneaker wipes, revamp it, but launch something with just a bunch of grease on it, so people can rub that on their sneakers and make them look distressed. And look, when you sell a million of these in week one, just send me a thank you card. That's all I ask. I don't even need a piece.
I mean, I don't want to steal this idea from you or Jacques, but I feel like Cars in the Garage, you know, grease stains is a pretty easy tie-in to sell if we can sell, you know, wipes to make your shoes dirty.
Here's the problem: is we have all these amazing ideas and we just put them out there publicly for free on the pod. We need to start having these conversations off air and figure out a game plan to actually launch whatever business it is we're going to launch. No, but this is interesting. This approach, it feels like both the car world and the sneaker world are really in this, like, let's throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and see what sticks kind of moment. Because I don't think any of us really know what the next 10 years of life look like on so many levels. And that's a whole different podcast there, but it feels like a lot of people in the marketing world are literally trying anything they can to see what kind of hype it gets, to see what's going to stick. And if it doesn't stick, because of the way the news cycle works nowadays, it just gets slipped under the rug and forgotten about a couple weeks later anyway. So it's like a free focus group, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know.
Jacques doesn't like it.
I mean, it feels like the tech is going backwards in sneakers to me. Like, we haven't had self-lacing shoes or auto-lacing shoes. You know, like, where we thought we would be is significantly back. I mean, in the car scene too, like, we don't have flying cars like the Jetsons. But, you know, for the most part, like, we're getting really close to a lot of those things that we kind of thought would happen, you know, in terms of, you know, self-driving stuff and, you know, gamification of vehicles and all that stuff. So
maybe it's our age showing. Like, we grew up in the era of Back to the Future, where we were promised flying cars, flying DeLoreans,
DeLoreans
could go
yes.
back in time. We were promised self-lacing shoes with dope lights on them, which they kind of exist, but they're unattainable. And we were promised like self-drying jackets and hoverboards and all of this stuff. And it seems like we've been chasing all of these things since 85 or whatever it was. And we're getting grumpy and old because none of it's really coming to fruition. That's what it seems like.
I was going to say, if there's anything I'm mad about for the auto industry, it's the fact that we don't have flying cars.
Yeah.
Like, I expect someone every time I get a news report of a new flying car was tested here, I read everything about it. Like, I'm just, that's the one thing that I'd be like, all right, I'm good. That's the car that I need, the flying car.
Anything to get out of LA traffic.
I was
right?
just going
to
say, you can tell which one of us still lives in LA.
Yeah. But before we get out of here, I just want to jump back to the car tech thing. I was thinking about this as we were talking about it. And I think there's there's a beauty to the car being just like a screen. Like there is a beauty to that. Like the simple, it's simplified. And I was trying to think, like, we were talking about the Jetsons, like the Jetsons car, there wasn't really much in there, but the driving stick or whatever it was that he used to control it. And I was like, there is something cool or something, like, I guess simplified or craft like of a car having nothing in it but that screen and still being able to do all the things that it does. So mm-hmm. I guess if we can balance that beauty with the function, I think that's probably where the happy medium is. It's balancing the beauty with the function. I think we're too focused on beauty or too focused on simplification, or we're too focused on technology and function, but we've got to find where that happy medium is. Like Ford doesn't have it. I feel like they're too still in the utility space with their cars. Tesla doesn't have it because it's too simple. There's got to be somebody that can really find that happy medium of simple but functional. And I think they're going to win.
Yeah, it's a tricky, tricky thing. And obviously nobody's mastered it yet. And I think the simple solution is kind of what all of us have done. You just buy multiples of everything. You need a bunch of sneakers and a bunch of cars. There you go.
Yes. Buy one of each. Buy one of each. Get one of each. That way you get yourself covered.
Yep.
That's hilarious.
Oh man. Well, I was going to say Jacques's going to send us out here. There's a whole other topic that came to mind when you were talking about that, and we'll maybe bring that up in the next episode when it comes to like simplifying cars and whatnot. Just to tease that, some of y'all may have seen this Slate vehicle that is backed by Bezos that just launched. Again, whole other episode there, and it ties into a whole bunch of things. So we'll probably drop that one soon. Make sure you tune into that. But Jacques, take us away.
As always, guys, thank you for listening to Cars and Kicks. Make sure you're following us on all the places. Make sure you shoot us an email if you have something to say. We want to reply to you guys. What's the email, Nick?
Oh, they can find it at carsxkicks.com.
Yeah. Go to carsxkicks.com and you can find out all the things you need, where to follow all of us and all of those good things. Make sure you leave a comment, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Share this. And as always, we appreciate you guys, and we'll see you on the next episode. Peace.
Peace.